So no Sean, man.
Is this the start of the podcast?
This is the start. Where's Sean?
Okay. He's ill, I believe.
Yeah. It's a shame. I've been getting used to this whole threesome thing we're doing.
I know. Now we're cutting it back.
Yeah, but I believe he's actually sent us a little bit of something he can add to the conversation.
Yeah, later, I'm quite curious to hear this.
Yeah, cool. Well, anyway, why are we whispering?
I don't know. We've got a new setup. We're doing things a little differently, so I think we're just getting used to the new digs.
A little bit experimental. Yeah. Anyway, this is the FakeShemp.net podcast.
First you want to kill me, now you want to kiss me. Blow.
Hey, you've got 3 seconds for it.
I'm going to amp this baby up, see how it sounds.
My name's Glenn.
And I'm Jarrett.
Thanks for listening. You can find us on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram. Find us on Facebook.
Wow.
No doubt they've found us on one of those things, otherwise they wouldn't be
listening. Absolutely. We're not on Pinterest yet, are we?
No, maybe we need to do that.
Well, yeah, I might speak to the wife. She's pretty big on that Pinterest world.
Excellent there. What's been going on?
Dude, what's been going on? Muff for like the last 8 days, and I think it's taken its toll. We're broken men.
It's been extensive, exhausting and taxing.
Absolutely. But it's been a hell of a lot of fun.
It's been so much fun. It's pretty much been every night for, what, 8 nights straight?
Eight nights straight.
Far out. So, but before Muff, we had the Fitzroy Film Fair, which we went to. So that was awesome.
That was good. Like, I've never, ever been to anything quite like it. I don't think there's anything locally happening like that. It's more in the vein of, you know, US conventions and things like that, where you've got dealer stands and you know, live performance. There was all sorts of things happening there that we didn't see because, obviously, we were at the stand.
Yeah, and for people that have never been to the Luau, which is a little bar in Melbourne, it's a weird tropical Hawaiian-themed bar, restaurant.
Like a tiki sort of bar.
Yeah, and to have that decked out for traders was amazing. And we would encourage you all to get along to the next one. I think it's happening in December.
So. Yes, Saturday, December 5th,
I think, we will be along. Our store proved to be pretty popular.
Yeah, and I believe that there'll be a special guest actress from Russ Meyer Films there.
Awesome.
So, it's going to be a big one.
Yeah, fantastic. But yeah, Muff, let's get back onto that. That started off with us on Triple R Radio.
That's right, of course.
How fun was that?
That was a lot of fun. That was the first time I've done radio in about a decade. But
wow.
Yeah, it was good fun. It was just weird. There was like, how many of us? 10?
No, not quite.
I think
it was
7.
7.
Right, okay.
Let's just round it off.
Yeah, 7. That's a good number.
It was so much fun. Well, we had Tim Burns, or a.k.a. Tim Spanos.
Yes.
We had Hussein Kota, Richard Wollstonecraft, Kristen Condon, yourself, myself, and that's it, I think.
And Andrew Leibold.
Yeah. How can we forget Stumpy?
Of course.
So it was heaps of fun, and it's actually, there's a link to it on our website.
And you should listen to it, because Glenn's got some amazing stories, particularly one about a video store return shoot.
Yeah, the Tales from the Clerk Live.
Totally, totally.
So what else? Well, congratulations to you, because you just won an award for Best Documentary at MUFF, which was an amazing achievement.
Absolutely. I found the farthest corner in the room that I could hide in, because I didn't have a feeling that I was going to win it, so I kind of just wanted to...
Really?
Yeah, no, I don't know.
I kind of thought you were in for chance. It's a good doco, man.
Yeah, oh, thanks, man. Yeah, no, Addison had some sweet words to say about it, and Addison took out some major awards, him and his team, from Under a Kaleidoscope, which was one of our favourite films, not only last year, but this year.
Yep.
It was good to finally see it again now in a completed form with all the sound design, additional tracks in there.
Much smoother.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, really cool. Solid film.
Awesome. So we've obviously been running an ongoing commentary of the festival. So on the website, you've got diary entries every day. Last night was the wrap party, so that one's going to go up within the next 12 hours.
Cool.
Lots to do, so click away. The only other thing I want to add is I've got a brand new micro podcast.
Yes.
Which I've been flogging away. If you've been following us on social media, they've been uploaded every single day. So check them out. They're 2-minute
episodes. You just did one on Die Hard, the last Die Hard film, Live Free or Die Hard.
That went up this morning.
Yeah, I'm dead keen to hear that.
Yeah, it's a bit of fun. It kind of breaks our mantra of, you know, looking for the good in the bad.
Mm.
This one just sort of takes the bad and kicks him in the balls.
Oh, well, I think it's overdue. Some films need it. Like fucking Live Free or Die Hard. If there was ever a film that needs the shit kicked out of it, it's that fucking film.
And that one kind of broke a second mantra, because I made up my mind with these micro podcasts that they would all be older films where it's kind of fair. You know, time has, you know,
They've done what they've done, exactly. And now it's time to pick the bones.
That's right, man.
Kick it in the carcass.
With the Die Hard one, I thought, no, that's just open slather.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Plenty more to come, but it's called What the Fuck Was That? So
yep.
Check it out. Every single day there's a new episode. They go for 2 minutes.
That's intense, man. So when you say every day, do you mean like maybe like by weekdays, like five, or are you talking about like seven?
I'm talking 7 days a week. The only day that it won't go up.
Commitment.
Potentially will be the days that we do this podcast.
Right. So, makes sense.
Yeah. But also, if I go away or I've got a holiday coming up, I won't be doing it then.
No, obviously. No, that's understandable.
But maybe I'll record a back cat and you can.
Yeah, you can upload. Well, there you go. Yeah, no, I'm happy to do
but
that.
But the response has been cool.
Yeah, everyone at the festival when we were talking to people at Muff, they were like, oh, I've heard your new podcast. Yeah. And everyone was seeming to get into it.
So I'm happy about that.
Very cool, man. Yeah, very awesome. Cool.
All right,
and it's good. It's good to hear you, you know, talk some shit on films.
Yeah,
because you know, you're always looking at the positive.
Yeah.
So it's good. And if there was ever a film that needed the shit talked about it, it's Live Free or Die Hard.
Yeah.
I'm just reiterating
no,
that
No, it's the wrong
more.
One. Long, it's
Live Free or Die Hard?
No, that's number four.
I thought that
it's
was
Good Day to
oh,
Die
that
Hard.
Was Good Day to Die Hard. Yeah, sorry. I remember it's Die Hard 4.0 because that was the Australian theatrical
course.
Title.
Yeah, no.
Of course, it's very confusing.
We're talking the Moscow one.
Absolutely. Does it mean that you might talk about the Nightmare on Elm Street remake?
Oh, possibly.
Oh, that'll be interesting.
Possibly, but that's a cheap shot. That's too easy.
Yeah, it is a cheap
it's
shot.
Very it's very easy. So I'm trying to just sort of strip it back to ones that are sort of forgotten, you know.
Fair enough, fair
but
enough.
Anyway, we'll see how we go. If I run out of ideas, that's one I'll add to my list.
No, I can imagine. I'm dead keen to hear more of your thoughts on that film.
Cool. All right, well, let's move on with the episode, shall we?
Let's.
All right. Time for our focus film.
Oh, yes.
Purple Rain. Purple Rain.
First motion picture. Don't lie. Where's you living in? Before he created the music, he lived every bit of it. I call my old lady, old friendly word. Risked too much for the one thing that meant everything. His music. Prince. The story. The struggle. The movie. Purple Rain.
So this is the first time I saw Purple Rain.
Really?
Yeah.
How's that
I've never
possible?
Seen it. It's weird because it was made in 84, so it's been out for 31 years. Watching it on the big screen tonight doesn't look like a film that was made 31 years ago. It looks like a film that was made in the early to mid 80s.
Freaking but it's stunning, though.
It looked incredible. Like, the things that stood out to me were the cinematography, I thought was outstanding. The lighting
the
on
light
the film,
amazing.
Incredible. And I've never been a massive Prince fan, but the guy's a showman, like through and through.
He's
when he's on stage, it's insane.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and this is a film that makes me happy. It sends me to a happy place, and it's a very dark film. There's no doubt
there's
about
some
it.
Some dark moments in there,
lots
for sure.
Lots of domestic violence, lots
and
of misogyny.
It's got a weird misogynistic tone to it. I know that there is sort of, you know, redemption sort of angle, but there's a lot of women being referred to as bitches, a woman being thrown in a trash, you know, can.
I know, and when they're on stage they're in lingerie.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That was really, but the boobs.
I must admit,
maybe the boobs. I saw those boobs. I didn't think we were going to see that in Purple Rain.
Or when he grabs her on the crutch and starts.
Oh, that was, that was some pretty weird
but the
shit.
Way I look at it too with the misogynistic stuff or the way the women are portrayed, at the same time, he portrays himself as a slut.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right, so like,
absolutely.
For every time you see them in lingerie on stage, he's all sweaty and shirtless.
Yeah, and oiled up.
It's kind of gross.
It was weird. And then you got Morris, who literally is, I might have some bitches here. So if the other bitch comes in, give me a password, get me a secret word sort of thing. And he's pretty much playing a slut-like character himself.
Yeah, that's right.
Unabashed.
So you approve of this? You think this
I thought it was great. Look, I won't be in a hurry to revisit it.
Sure, of course.
But it was incredible, and it wasn't boring. It was consistently entertaining. And it was just so over the top.
Yeah, I don't think it's even necessary to go into a synopsis with this one. It's a showcase for Prince's music.
Absolutely.
It's a concert film in many ways, but it's also interjected with all these, you know, narrative pieces. Yeah.
Was this the first film of its kind like this?
Perhaps. I mean, watching it, the aesthetic of it is very similar to Streets of Fire.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, right.
Without the rumble kind of element, you know, right. the gangs and all that. But the look of it and the tone with the streets with the fog and the mist and
the
colours
smoke.
The neons and all that. Yeah, I love it. I never loved Prince before it, right?
Right, right.
I don't love him now, but I've got so much time for him now. I think this film, he really portrayed himself in a very, very negative light and he's quite vulnerable in it as far as, like, he was at the prime of his career.
How young was he? Because obviously he's referred to as the kid in it.
Yeah.
But how young was he? He does look young.
That's a good question. Yeah. But he's ageless, man. Like, he still looks young. Like, I guess he would have been in his mid-20s.
Right.
I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just think he was at the height of his career and the way he's portrayed could have been damaging to his career.
Yeah, it's a bold move.
Yeah.
It's a bold move. And it is a real career kind of, you know, this could be saturation, putting yourself out there, putting yourself on a big screen and doing an acting kind of role. Because outside of this film, and I know he's made maybe two other movies, like Under a Cherry Moon and whatever the other one's called.
Well, I was going to say that there's a sequel to this one.
Is it?
Yeah, Graffiti Bridge.
Oh, yes.
So that's...
And how does that hold up, though? Is that any good?
That's terrible. It's actually, he comes back as the kid and he co-owns a club with Morris.
Oh, okay.
Right, so they're actually collaborators in real life, those two. But it's done on soundstage, which usually I love, but this one is very tacky.
Okay.
It's just the music's not as captivating because I think the music in Purple.
How many years between these movies too?
Graffiti Bridge would have been like 91 and
oh my god. Okay, so yeah, right. This in the 90s.
What was Purple Rain? 84. Yeah. So still a little.
And then Under a Cherry Moon was somewhere like 86 or something.
Yeah,
maybe
that's the period one, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. It's like 20s or something like that.
Something like
right.
that.
I've never seen it, but I do. It's actually got quite good artwork.
Yeah, but this was the first of his films.
Yeah.
You know,
and outside of his own films, like these three films we've just discussed, he doesn't really do anything in anyone else's. Has he been in anyone else's movies?
Not that I can think of. Like, did he have a brief cameo in Batman? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. Just the music video.
But he's a singer, you know.
Yeah.
And he's
a strange enigma.
There were lots of artists, when you think about it, through the 80s and 90s that had these films, you know, to showcase what they do.
Yeah. But no one's doing these films like now. Like, you have, like, Justin Bieber movie come out. It's a documentary, say, or the Katy Perry one. The
last one was probably Spice World, man.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, like, late 90s, about 97, 98 or something.
That's right. Yeah. I haven't seen anything recently where they've done this.
No, it's interesting. And it's odd. Like, why wouldn't you not exploit that and do something like it?
That's fun,
absolutely. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, but anyway, Purple Rain, it was amazing to see it on the big screen.
Very cool.
First time for me at a cinema. And we had a whole lot of women talking.
Yeah, running an audio commentary on it.
The movie.
Totally.
I even told them to shut up.
Understandable. You did this gesture with your hands as in to say, like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I didn't actually tell them to shut up. It was the gesture. The motion,
But shut them up briefly.
Yeah. Anyway.
And then they were competing with Prince during some of his song moments, and they were just talking louder, and you're like, really? What the fuck are you doing here?
You know what this movie also showcases or teaches us? That Prince is the worst kisser in the world. Did you notice his kissing?
No, I didn't really.
Maybe that's because you didn't have your glasses with you.
I didn't have my glasses with me.
To describe Prince's kissing, like, he puts himself out there as a womanizer, right?
Yes.
So he should know how to kiss.
Yeah, yeah.
All he does is he mashes his lips against the other person's lips.
Maybe it's the magic of what's underneath. Maybe he's slipping the tongue in and doing crazy things there.
Maybe it's that.
Giving him that sort of African-American / Hispanic tongue.
That purple spit, maybe.
Now that we've discussed Purple Rain at length, can you tell the good people what you saw after Purple Rain before you left the cinema?
All right. Okay. So thanks for bringing this up.
I wanted to, it needs to be documented.
If ever there was mental scarring, it's now. I went to the men's after the film. Sorry, it's going to take me a minute to compose myself to tell this story. So I went into the men's room and went into one of the cubicles as opposed to the urinal.
Yeah.
And I walked in there and there was a gentleman occupying the one next to it. So go to do my business, look down at the floor.
Right.
Very smick, polished floor.
Nice. Very cool.
Absolute perfect reflection of a guy wiping his ass.
Not cool.
Not cool at all,
That's
man.
That's disgusting.
And what makes it worse is that he saw me see him.
Mm.
And it was this awkward moment of who's going to leave first?
Yeah, that's
I'd let him leave first.
No.
Then I was hoping I wouldn't see him in the foyer.
Yeah,
on the way
absolutely.
Out.
It would have been the
gone,
fastest
man.
Wash of the hands.
He was fucking gone. No, I don't think he even did.
Oh, no, that's even worse.
That's not worse because like he did not want to be hanging around.
True.
And he was like, out.
Damn, there you go.
Yeah, so anyway, that wraps up Purple Rain
and Brown Stain.
Because they prefer the weeds of the plain, the jockeys spend long periods in the open, risking attack from hunters, like the artist formerly known as Prince.
So shall we move on to obscurities?
Let's.
What's yours?
Okay, my film's from 98. Well, this is the funny thing. We discussed this week that we would do obscurities, and then I mentioned, oh, I think we're due for guilty pleasure. And like, we could do guilty pleasures. And I went, nah, let's stick with obscurities.
Yeah, we can do whatever we want.
I went in with an obscurity. I came out with a guilty pleasure.
Okay.
Because I thought it was going to be an obscurity.
Well, I can't wait to hear about it.
It's a 1976 film called Food of the Gods. Do you remember Food of the Gods?
Yes.
It's an obscurity because it's never been released on DVD or Blu-ray in Australia. Just got a release about a month or so back on Blu-ray in the US.
I know it.
In a
I
double
don't
pack.
Think I've seen it.
Oh, dude, you've got to see it. It's incredible. Like, it is incredible because it's very much of its era. Like, it's shot in 76 and there's a lot of matted sort of video effects and green screen or whatever the equivalent was in that period of time.
Sure.
So, the basic premise of it is that there's this small sort of town somewhere in Canada.
Yep.
And this farm sort of discovered a natural element that they can feed to their livestock and it will increase their size. So they've got gigantic chickens, but then, you know, the rats get in and they get in it and then suddenly you've got all these giant creatures happening and they're actually literally real creatures.
Wow.
That are, yeah, you've got the actors playing in front of them.
Forced perspective.
And it looks so bad, man. And one thing that came to me when I watched it this time around was I think there's a fair bit of animal cruelty in it.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
Which is kind of, yeah.
Disappointing.
A bit heartbreaking because, yeah, there's some scenes with rats and, you know, I never owned a rat, but I think they're quite cool.
They are cool.
I guess you've got to take that as a
period piece. You know,
it is.
Like,
you know, absolutely. You know, times have changed and I'm fairly sure at the end of the movie it doesn't have no animals were harmed, but I can't be 100% sure of that.
Just glaze over that.
Yeah. The weirdest thing is that the film's based on a story by H.G. Wells that came out written in about 1904.
Right.
But the opening credits for the film, it says, based on a portion of a story by H.G. Wells. Yet the title reached H.G. Wells, Food of the Gods. So there you go. Yeah, apparently, it's a small portion of that story. But the director who did it...
Is that because it's food and portions and...
Yeah, moderate portion. That makes sense, doesn't it? But the this particular film, the director, who I can't remember his name, he did direct a couple of these H.G. Wells films. He did Empire of the Ants, which was good with Joan Collins.
Yeah.
And he did another one, Village of the... Not the Dam, but Village of the Giants or something. I'm not sure. But yeah, look, it's laughable at times. Yeah. And it's definitely not really so bad. It's good. It's just entertaining.
I've always seen clips of it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah.
You absolutely have to watch it. The next one I'm going to hit up is Empire of the Ants after this, because I remember having a very sort of high opinion of that also, like I did with Food of the Gods. But I want to watch Food of the Gods 2, which was a director video. Well, actually, it might have gone theatrical back in the early 90s, so I'm going to track down a copy of that.
Is there anything you can find online?
Or? No, that one is available in the US through Artisan, but apparently it's in pan and scan. It's actually not even pan and scan. I think it's full frame because apparently boom mics dropped down during it, stuff that should have been cropped out when it was screened theatrically.
Right.
But yeah, I'm quite keen to revisit that one because it trailers really well. I watched the trailer on YouTube and I'm like, yeah, this is my kind of shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, Food of the Gods, thoroughly recommended.
That's on my menu
it's
very
totally
soon.
Totally guilty. Yeah, totally awesome. Guilty obscurity.
Cool. Well, I guess mine could be guilty, but
right.
I thought it was actually quite good. It's one I discovered recently and I got it off eBay and it just surprised the shit out of me. It's called Midnight Movie.
Oh, yeah, I saw this a few years ago, yeah.
Did you watch the film?
Yeah, I did, a number of years ago, yeah.
So it's sort of a grindhousey kind of horror film. It all takes place in a rundown cinema where there's a screening of a notorious horror film from the 70s, which is very a la Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But the patrons in the cinema find themselves the victims of the film's curse, where the killer comes out from the screen.
Right.
Kind of like
the Australian
Rose
one,
of Cairo
too.
Kind
cut
of.
As well. Like the Aussie one, cut.
That's right. Yeah. So the killer comes off the screen and starts, you know, picking them off one by one. But it just blew me away. I thought the whole texture of the film and for such a low-budget indie film, it looked stunning. The killer was ingeniously designed. And I saw the theatrical cut. And,
right. That's
and
the only one I've seen, I think.
And I knew watching it that there was a director's cut that existed.
Okay.
And watching it, I'm thinking I would love to catch this director's cut.
Because
what I'm watching is fucking amazing. And if they've toned down the violence for this cut, imagine what the director's cut's going to be like. So I have got that now, just haven't watched it yet.
All right, cool. I'd be dead keen to hear how that holds
up. It's super gory and it's just heaps of fun and, you know, just, it's definitely something you should look for. I don't know how it slipped past so many radars.
Yeah, no, it was a weird one. I know it came out through someone like, I don't know if it was Eagle, but it was someone small that
it
came out through.
I think it might have been Eagle.
Yeah, there you go.
When I first watched it, it was the screener disc.
Right. Okay.
I don't actually think it was Eagle, but we'll figure that out later.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but
it even had pretty cool artwork from memory too.
The
original artwork.
But the director's cut artwork is terrible.
I saw you post that on the Facebook. It looks shit.
Yeah, really shit. So.
Yeah, no, that's a cool film. I haven't seen it for maybe, I don't know, 5 years or something. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, cool. Well,
when did that come out? Was that like 2000?
Yeah, it would have been about 5 years ago. I can't remember the date, but it's definitely something I discovered recently, and I love finding films that are just so good and
I love those ones that slip by.
Yeah,
I had that with Laid to Rest. I didn't see that until a few years after it came out. Thought it was good. Then I watched Chrome Skull. Did not think that was good.
No, it's not that great. No. But no, Laid to Rest is very cool.
Very cool.
All right, let's move. Well, actually, Sean has a... an obscurity.
Oh, cool.
That's what we're talking about. So he actually pre-recorded something for us because he's not well. That's why he's not joining us tonight.
Yeah.
So let's take a listen to what his might be.
Back in 1992, nobody really knew who Dennis Leary was. Wasn't until a TV special came out called No Cure for Cancer that his name exploded across the planet. No Cure for Cancer, the TV special anyway, was directed by Ted Demme, brother of Jonathan. And this would mark the first collaboration of a relationship that would last the better part of 20 years between Ted Demme and Dennis Leary. In 1994, they joined forces again, and Dennis Leary starred in a little Christmas comedy film called The Ref, which co-starred a relatively unknown Kevin Spacey as well. If you haven't seen that, it's well worth it. But in 1998, they got together again and they made a small film called Noose. Yeah, at least in Australia, it's called Noose. Everywhere else, it's got a different name. Sometimes it's known as Snitch and elsewhere it's known as Monument Avenue. But in Australia, it's known as Noose. Noose is a really quality, slow burn character drama set in the Boston Irish neighborhoods. Dennis Leary stars as Bobby O'Grady, a two-bit car thief who grew up in the blue-collar streets of Boston, and his loyalty gets torn between his best friend Mouse and his cousin Seamus and his boss called Meanie after his boss orders a hit that kills their best friend in a pub one night, played by Billy Crudup. Martin Sheen pops up to play the investigative police officer trying to work out exactly the ins and outs of what's going on, and Famke Janssen pops her head in to play the love interest, and that's a little bit too complicated for this little brief synopsis. However, if you haven't seen Noose, it is well worth it. It's a great little film, low-key character drama that really invests everything in performance and pacing. For the better part of the first act, not much happens. It's just character setup. It just eases you into this world before this blistering act of violence that really isn't overplayed in any way, shape, or form takes these guys' lives and pulls it to pieces. It sounds a little bit melodramatic, but it's not. It's actually handled really well. For my money, 1998, Noose was up there with the top 5 films. It's a shame that nobody, just about nobody, has seen it because it really, really deserves a much bigger audience. Anyway, that was my obscurity for this week. I do hope everybody gets into it and enjoys it, and feel free to drop the Fake Shem website a line, and if you have seen it, let us know what you think, because like I say, not many people have seen it and I'd like to know more of them. Ciao, guys.
After feasting greedily on the carcass, the artist will sleep. It will be 2 days before he hunts again.
Okay, so that's pretty much like the order of business. So let's... Have you got anything else you want to add? Like, have you got a topic that you want to talk about? I know I do.
Well, let's touch on your topic first and give me an idea.
Okay.
Yeah, I would hate to come up with your topic.
That's probably a good idea because mine's quite a somber note. I want to talk about Wes Craven.
Oh my god, I was going to mention it earlier.
Since the last episode, and it's been quite a while since our last episode, obviously Wes Craven passed away, which was a massive blow. I didn't even know he was ill.
Yeah.
Maybe I'd read about it, but just...
They kept it very low key.
Yeah, and just to wake up one morning and find out that a godfather of horror...
Absolutely.
...is just gone.
Yeah, yeah.
...was just what a blow.
Yeah, and I was moved to tears.
the entire world was watching Wes Craven films that night.
Yeah, I hear you.
No doubt.
Yeah.
What, did you watch one?
No, because I had my actual movie conference, so I ended up seeing American Ultra, which was the furthest thing from a Wes Craven film.
But do you want to know the spooky thing is the day before, I had watched Bloody Vampire in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
What's with that?
That's not good. We were going to do Deadly Blessing the day before, which is weird, ran short on time.
Oh, my God. So, anyway, that night I thought I was trying to think, what one can I watch that's going to sort of honor him the most? So, yeah. I chose New Nightmare because I think that is probably one of his most personal films.
Yeah, absolutely. He wrote, directed.
He wrote, directed, but it was also
even stars as himself.
Yes, but it was him reclaiming the franchise he felt like he had lost control of. Yeah. And that, to me, was a very personal thing. It's a movie with a lot of heart and a lot of soul, and it really does strip things away and bring it right back to where it was in the first place. Yeah. You know, just an intense horror film. Gone are the gimmicks. Gone are the bloody one-liners and Freddy Krueger, a monster again.
Super clever film too, because it predates, the Charlie Kaufman film, being John Malkovich and that. So it was very sort of meta.
Very meta.
And probably still to this date, doesn't get the recognition it deserves. You know, I think over the years it started to become a bit more of a,
However, recall when it came out in Australia, Margaret Pomerantz and David Stratton gave it like 4.5 out of 5. Yeah. They really, really, sold it as a really must-see kind of film.
I remember seeing it at the movies and having to practically... I always had to do that when I was a kid, force my friends to go see horror movies. Yeah. Unless it was my sister. And I had to drag a mate to go and see it. And he was like, at the end, I don't even know what that was about. And I'm like...
Yeah, it was really good.
It was really clever. Really fucking clever.
So, massive blow. And, like, we follow people like Mick Garris online and there are other horror filmmakers, and all the tributes that were flowing through were just awesome.
Yeah, very heartfelt.
And they do those sort of quarterly horror get-together
dinners. Yes, I saw that this last week.
They did a big one.
It's huge.
In honour.
There was even Greg McLean was there.
Greg, that's the first one I've seen him in attendance.
Yeah, very cool.
I don't think I saw Brian Trenchard-Smith in there. He's usually in attendance, but they probably all have their own projects. It's hard to pull that many people together, but what a smorgasbord of talent.
That was great, and you saw like a lot of fresh faces of horror too. Yeah. Like even Edgar Wright was there.
Edgar Wright.
And arguably he's done a horror comedy, but then you had Ty West, Adam Rifkin, right. Yeah.
Anyway.
The who's who.
The who's who. William Malone current, stuck in the background there. He's in all of them.
Yeah, man. No, that makes sense.
Anyway, so that was my topic. Yeah. I don't want to end on that note.
No, well, I was going to mention too that I had a really sort of fortunate circumstance when I was in New York about 3 years ago.
Yep.
And I went to the New York Horror Film Festival, and Wes Craven was a guest of honor, and they did a Lifetime Achievement Award, and then screened, unfortunately, Scream afterward. You think they would have gone with Nightmare on Elm Street, Hills of Eyes, any of those. But they did Scream. And the guy was just so down to earth and just so in touch with his fans. People asked questions, he would respond. And I can't remember what the question I asked was, but it was in relation to Deadly Blessing. And he was stoked because he was sort of like, it's a film that, kind of got taken out of my hands, but it doesn't really get talked about. And I'm really happy that it's finally now getting a release in places around the world.
Awesome.
But and then got the opportunity to meet him afterward, and he was just, an absolute champ. Like,
brilliant.
And he didn't need to be because he's a fucking legend.
That's right. You're a lucky bastard for that.
Yeah, honestly, it's one of those moments you go, thank God, that's incredible. I'll always hold it dear to my heart.
Yep. Cool. Well, is there anything else you want to add to the conversation before we wrap it up? It's a nice, short, taut episode tonight.
Yeah, no. I almost feel like I should. Maybe I'll briefly touch on the Melbourne Underground Film Festival and a film that we actually saw.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if you're going to do a review for at this stage, because normally your reviews come out like straight away.
I will.
But Nina Forever, like, we were both taken back.
And the
by
reason
this film.
I haven't reviewed it yet, because I needed to process it.
It's a processing film.
This one,
And it just gets better the more you think about it.
It's a stunner.
It's a beautifully shot film. It's incredible performances. It goes places where you don't think it will go, or anywhere that a film should go.
Yeah.
And it does it with such artistry and
it's a beautiful looking
intellect.
Film.
Yeah, it is a stunning movie. And this is the thing that really shits me, dude, is that we go and see this film that's possibly one of the best genre films of the year. And it's a different, challenging genre film.
Yeah.
And then you get a cinema that's got like 10 to 12 people. And people want to support, genre cinema, but then they don't go out and they don't go and see this film.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Let's touch on that. What's with people, online communities, absolutely talking themselves up that they're grand champions of independent cinema?
Absolutely.
Yet every time we go to any kind of screening where it is remotely independent, there is never anybody
there's
there.
Not a soul to be seen.
Like, what is with this? It's all talk. It's fucking parading, it's showboating, and it's pretty, it's lousy.
Now, I can't comprehend it, because then you get people that go onto Facebook, will commit to events, and they never see it through. There's not an element of guilt about it whatsoever. And yeah. I understand that people have got things that come up and, you know, life gets in the way of stuff, but where the fuck are they? There's enough screenings going on, like Muff, there was plenty of screenings, and, you know, the attendance outside of opening and closing night was pretty much half capacity at best for other screenings.
Yeah.
And that's heartbreaking because a lot of local filmmakers putting films out there and people seem to be genuinely interested in wanting to support it, but then they're not there, you know.
That's it. It's a sad state of affairs, man. We would implore you all to get out and support this shit. Like,
absolutely.
We generally let you know when this stuff is going on. You know, take the invitation. Go along. Yeah, like,
That's it. And you're going to see films. Like, because you're going to... There's the people that start the argument of, you know, all the genre films go straight to DVD. You don't get to see them in movies. All you've got to do is just... Look out, there's films being talked about on, you know, Dread Central, Bloody Disgusting, FakeShemp.net.
Yeah.
And these are the films that, you know, you're going to love when they hit home end. But you've got an opportunity to see them in a cinema and to see them before everyone's talked about it and ruined the film for you. Get out and support.
And if you're the fan that you're claiming to be and you're only looking at the bloody multiplex guides for these movies, obviously not a fan at all.
Like, no, that's seriously. It. You've got to pick through these things. Like, I even looked at recently, the Italian Film Festival is going to be in town. It's in town at the moment. I think it actually opened on Friday night. And there's one sort of borderline genre sort of fantasy film that's screening. It's actually probably the only English language film at the Italian Film Festival. It's a French, Italian, and UK co-production. But I'm going to go and see it. It's got like Toby Jones, Selma Hayek.
Oh, cool.
And it sounds absolutely amazing. And I think from memory, it might be three short stories.
Sure.
So anthology, like sort of fantasy, horror, fantastic. But look, you just got to, there's these films to be seen. Even the Italian Film Festival a couple of years ago, they did a Fulci retrospective.
There you go.
And they screened House. By the cemetery, the Beyond, and you know, again, it was probably about like 10 people in the cinema.
So stop beating your chest and fucking get out and see it. You know,
see it before anyone else.
And the good thing is, with these communities, there could be a real hub about these things. You could come out of the cinema and have discussions and drinks and
have a beer.
Have a piston head. It's a fantastic environment to be part of.
Absolutely. Anyway. Absolutely. And we're always there, we're keen to hang out. So come and see a movie and let's talk about it. Let's dissect the fuck out of it after the movie.
Well, a good example. I mean, it's not horror, but today we saw Purple Rain. There's a whole cult lineup at the Croydon Cinemas. Totally. Go to the Astor, there's a whole lineup of art house cult films.
Yeah.
And the attendances just don't reflect what they should.
No, it's strange, isn't it, man?
It is.
It's a phenomenon that I haven't really got my head around.
Strange.
Because it's different in other cities. Yeah, I mean, maybe we're spoiled for culture here in Melbourne.
And that's the thing, because it's not just because there's downloads, right? Because there's DVD and Blu-ray. There's something about the culture in Melbourne. Like, we have a lot of it, and maybe that is what it is.
It's intimidating.
There's so much that, you know, it's too much on offer. It's too confusing. Because, like you said, Sydney, wherever, when they do these random things...
Yeah.
Full house, you know.
Yeah, totally. It works.
Perth, definitely, because they're starved of this
absolutely.
Kind of stuff. Anyway.
Absolutely.
Anyhow.
Yeah, cool.
Cool, cool. Well, let's wrap this baby up. How about that?
Sounds good, man.
Dennis Leary plays a small-time, basically two-bit card... Cut that bit out, Glenn.
Rightio. So, probably should note that we're going to be taking another big break before our next episode.
True. We're both going places.
Yeah, so I'm going on a trip. I think you've got a bit of travelling to
do. I'm going to Brisbane.
Ah, nicely done. But we will be back on the mic for Halloween.
Yes, it's going to be an incredible episode. We don't even know what film. I think it's going to be a bit of a shit fight to pick a film for that.
I'm pretty easy going.
Yeah,
I'm
Halloween 2, then the director's cut.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the Rob Zombie one.
Yeah, I know. I realised after you said it.
He agreed to it.
I think it's probably a good idea not to cover a Halloween film.
No, I think let's go for something slightly more obscure.
Yeah. What was the last Halloween
movie? Satan's Little Helper.
That's right. So
fucking classic.
Something like that, mate. Uncle Sam. Totally. Like that.
Yeah. Ooh, that'd be good.
Yeah, it would be.
I haven't seen that for a long time.
But anyway, what else should we talk about before we wrap it up? Don't forget, in the meantime, you can listen to the Micro Podcast. They're constant, so we might not be on the mic with the extended episodes, but there'll always be something to nibble on there.
We've got so much content on the YouTube because we've been recording all these Muff Q&As, so they're all there.
And we're not done with that yet.
No, there's more to come, so there's more material there.
Definitely.
Got a video collection happening in the next week or so.
Yep.
Yeah, not the biggest, but it's all quality.
That's right. That's good because we've got that much. Yeah. That much.
And I'll be able to talk about Food of the Gods at length again on there.
Nice. And look, if it sounds like we're worn out, we fucking are.
We are burnt to the crisp.
We are really burnt. So
like Korean chicken.
Thanks for sticking out with us. That's about it.
Thank you, Glenn.
Thank you, Jarrett. And thank you, Daniel McDonald. Sound design, always doing a wonderful job.
And get well soon, Sean.
Love you, Sean.
Outstanding.